are listening to Teacher Talk It, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide. teachertalkit.co.uk. Like, subscribe and follow to stay in the know.
These ideas that often are sold in a very utopian way and are often said to be the avant-garde are actually 40, 50 years old.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
Hello, and absolute pleasure to have Robert Peel on the Teachers Toolkit podcast today. I've been completely badgering Robert to come on the podcast for a long time now. As you'll find out when we have our conversation, he's got a huge amount of experience in teaching and education. He also is an amazing author. He's a historian. He's a co-head. So we've got so much to talk about this evening. So thank you so much, Robert, for coming on the podcast. Can you just tell us a little bit about your background, where you came from, how you worked yourself up to become the co-head of West London Free School, and sort of what you're focusing on now? That'd be great.
Absolutely. So I became a teacher in 2011 and started teaching in Birmingham. The first to admit, when I started teaching, I wasn't entirely sure that it was the career for me, but really, really fell in love with it and moved to the West London Free School in 2014. Where I've been ever since, and I became an assistant head there in 2016, then a deputy head a few years later, and then very soon after becoming a deputy head, myself and my fellow deputy became joint head teacher.
Absolutely brilliant, and like it's just a whirlwind for you, but obviously you worked your way up quite quickly, I suppose. And I remember the first time I ever met you is I came to West London Free School because you organised a history conference. And I remember sitting there and I think you're just so above and beyond anything that I'd ever seen before. And I remember going back to my head teacher and going, oh, I just don't understand how he's done that. So I think you were saying something about you might spend a whole lesson or a whole big chunk of time reading with a class and like interrogating a text together. And I sort of asked you the question, well, how do you showcase that to an Ofsted inspector? And when I went back to my head teacher at the time, he said, well, did you look in his books? And I said, well, no, I didn't. And he said, well, yeah, obviously that's how he would do it. But it was just really inspiring for me, actually. And that's why I wanted to get you on, is because I just wanted to get inside your brain a little bit more as well.
Free schools are very peculiar places to work. And it was incredibly hard work and very stressful when I was first there. We didn't decide, and there were all sorts of things that weren't in place. But the one massive benefit was that gave you a blank slate just to think very innovatively about things like curriculum. And it meant that we didn't have any inherited ways of working. We didn't have any inherited schemes of work. When I first started, there was only years 7, 8, 9, and 10. So I could spend almost all the time thinking about Key Stage 3. Although increasingly with every year that passes, it feels like what we're doing is normal, which I suppose is a nice thing.
Absolutely. So just unpicking your sort of story behind being a co-head, because obviously I'm very into that, I suppose. So I used to be a co-head and then went off on maternity leave and I've come back as something slightly different. So I didn't really know what to do. And I'm just really struggling to get back into that sort of position again as co-head. And obviously I'm from secondary schools in Suffolk and you're in London. So I just wanted to know sort of your background and your experience of it and how it's going.
I think it's a brilliant model if you can make it work. However, I think it's dependent. In our case, my co-head teacher is called Ben McLaughlin. He's in charge of pastoral and behaviour and curriculum. And I think it works very well, but because of quite fortuitous circumstances, which are that we both joined the school at the same time in 2014. We both became deputy head teachers at the same time. Huge amount of respect for what each other does, but absolutely zero desire to do each other's job. We were very good friends, which helps. And a year on, we remain very good friends. Long may that last. So I joked with members of staff that it works if it's a love match, but if it's an arranged marriage, I don't think it necessarily has the chance of succeeding. So I think it has to be very particular circumstances. I wonder if they're the same as when you became joint head teacher, that it was someone who you'd known for some time.
Yeah, and it so he joined a year ahead of me, but we're the same age, same point in our careers, became assistant heads together. I'm the yin to his yang, so he was progress standards, and I was sort of teaching and learning and curriculum, and obviously we actually had somebody else to sort of run on the behaviour, but obviously we both did behaviour at the same time as well. So we were actually part of a free school too, within that trust, and it was quite small at the time. So it just worked really, really well for it. Obviously now I want it back.
I really do think it feels like both Ben and I thought that we were years away of being a head teacher when we were appointed. But when the idea was suggested to us that we might be joint head teachers, that felt feasible. Yeah. So it feels like a very nice way into school leadership as well. I think maybe it's still a honeymoon period. I don't think it will.
We have been ready either, but because we did it together, you just had that support, didn't you?
Loved it.
So what are some of the focuses at the moment for you as a head? Because obviously we're still coming through a pandemic. I've seen, you know, operationally, it just became an operational nightmare. So every day your focuses weren't necessarily implementing a long haul plan around teaching, learning and curriculum. It was more about figuring out your cover and figuring out who's going to stand in front of the staff members, for example. So what's your focus at the moment in the West London Free School or as a head?
Keeping our heads above water with pupil absences, cover being harder than that. Yeah, that has kept us occupied for the most part this year. We have done new things at the school, but I think it has been mostly operational. And I think even if it weren't for COVID, that would have been the case, because we've just been sort of getting our feet under the desk and getting used to the role. And the other thing is, the school's in a pretty good position. There wasn't a burning platform for change to what we were doing. In terms of teaching and learning, the big thing that we're really focusing on this year and will continue to focus on next year is pupil dialogue in the classroom. So one of the things that we've always been very clear about at West London Free School is that we like teacher-led lessons. Mm-hmm. And we think that there's a good evidence base for that. We think from what we see around the school that is, for the most part, the best way for pupils to learn. However, we are aware there is the danger that pupils become but mentally passive. It is easier in those sorts of lessons, perhaps, to fool the teacher into thinking that you're learning when you're not actually. So we've been doing a lot on encouraging teachers to check for understanding, encouraging teachers to get pupils not just to speak in lessons but to speak well. We have various initiatives for that, but it feels like something that we I think we've improved this year on, but there's still some way to go. And even if it's one of those things that even if it had zero impact on pupil outcomes, we would still be wanting, because irrespective, pupils get the confidence to be able to speak in front of their peers, and the willingness and ability to project their voice in a room is just one of those benefits that, you know, everyone should have. Absolutely. From being at school.
Absolutely.
In terms of teaching and learning, that's one of the big focuses. I think we've still got work that we can do in helping our lower prior attainers. I think at the top end, pupils at West London Free School do really well. We've had pupils getting into Oxbridge every year since the sixth form started. We've had 4 Oxbridge offers in history this year, which has been wonderful, which is 50% of the Oxbridge offers for the school. Which we're very happy about, but I think that there's more work that we could be doing with the low prior attainers, particularly when it comes to literacy. We've got someone who's starting new at the school in September who's going to have responsibility teaching literacy to groups of low prior attainers, but also a better common language throughout the school and how we talk about sentence construction and paragraph construction. Those are two teaching and learning things that we're focusing on. And we have, I as a third thing, one of the big focuses that we've had this year is rewards. So we have a very tight, very effective behaviour system, which is integral to the school running well. But I think it has in the past been at the expense of recognising pupils doing things positively. And I think kind of tied in with the pupil voice thing as well. We, not pupil voice, we want pupils to speak more in front of their peers. So we have had, we've done more public speaking events at the school, but I would love if I could find the time in assemblies every week for pupils to their peers in assembly. That's something
I've done quite a lot of reading on oracy, and especially because we're from Suffolk as well, and it's getting students to be able to go to a dinner party with anybody who goes to a public school and to be the same as them, so you know, so that you've got exactly the same sort of vocabulary and you've got exactly the same, you're exposed to the same types of texts and anything, so that you're put in the right place to compete with them when it comes to Oxford, when it comes to Cambridge and things. I really agree.
And if you go to a public school, especially with a Church of England public school, which most they will have readings in chapel. And I would love for our school, which doesn't have a faith affiliation, to have a secular equivalent of that, to put together a selection of readings that could be read and repeated kind of year on year, so pupils get to know them. And you know, we have 39 teaching weeks in a year. We've got 130 pupils. So if you have an assembly every week in 3 years, you could give every pupil the opportunity to speak in front of their peers in assembly, delivering one of these readings. So that's something that we would love to put in next year.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely brilliant. I'd like to come and see that. That'd be absolutely, really great. So can you talk us through a little bit about you as an author? So obviously you've published some textbooks, you've published a very good book called Progressively Worse, and obviously more recently Meet the Georgians. So what are sort of your inspirations behind those things? Where do your ideas come from?
Progressively Worse, which was the first thing that I wrote, is really a modern history methods from the 1960s onwards. Well, that's what the good half of the book is. There's sort of two halves of the book. One is a potted history of teaching methods in schools, and then the other half is a sort of critique of child-centered learning. And I had the misfortune of the book being published in the same year as Daisy Christodoulou's book, Seven Myths About Education, which did the critique of child-centered learning much better than I did. So I say to anybody who reads Progressively Worse, read the first bit. The second half, just read Daisy's book. The first half, which is the history of teaching methods, I just felt when I was teaching in Birmingham, I was teaching in a school that had it wasn't just a knowledge basis to the curriculum, it was absent, it was positively discouraged. It was really that imbued the whole curriculum design and teaching approach, and a real aversion to teacher-led methods as well, and had this feeling that these weren't new ideas and that these were ideas that had been around for a long time. And I had read during my degree and during my master's in history, I'd read some 20th century history about sort of 1960s and 1970s culture wars, a term that has come back in vogue but was very much used back then, as classroom was a real center for it. There's a sort of turn in the 1960s and 1970s was the wellspring of a lot of these ideas. And what I wanted to do at Progressively Worse was just to say these ideas that often are sold in a very utopian way and are often said to be the avant-garde are actually 40, 50 years old. And for 40 or 50 years, failing to fulfill their promise in the classroom. And I hope that, I think particularly for people who have a sort of bent to the way they like to think about things, it was a useful perspective on that debate, which I'm sure you remember from 2000, you know, around that time was really raging. There were so many interesting conversations going on at that time.
Definitely. So what if you had to say what the best ever CPD you either hosted or ran or went to yourself would be, what would that be?
Gosh, I always say the best CPD is going visiting other schools, which may be a cop-out answer. It's one of the things that Ben and I brought in actually when we became joint heads was we moved one of our inset days to mid-November. And we had a day in mid-November where every member of staff got to go and visit another school. And it's something that we're going to keep now as a yearly fixture. Because I just, you know what, going to like conferences and things like education festivals and things like that, the CPD is always really beneficial and enjoyable. But it's the incidental conversations that I often remember most and come away with most. It's the sort of, you know, the pub after research ed environment. And obviously, a lot of the conversations are excited and talking about the sessions that they've seen. But I often think that the nice thing about those events is as much who you meet as the things you go and see. I just think that, visiting schools and having the opportunity to go and do that just gives you so many ideas. And often it isn't even directly related to the things that you're seeing. It's just the mental space to sit in a school which isn't your own and reflect about what you do.
And just to think, oh, I think this would be really good, or I think this would work really well with our staff. It's just, you know, people like you doing what you do but in a different way, and I think there's so much to be said for that.
And there are tiny things that I now walk on a preschool and see, and if I think hard I can think back to where we got that idea from. And they now just seem blindingly obvious, but all of them were things that I saw in another school and thought, oh my God, you've got to do that. I mean, a tiny example would be, I remember going and visiting Oasis South Bank. And they had their duty list on the stairwell on each floor. So if you were just checking who's on duty, you didn't have to kind of go onto the files bit of your phone and try and find it out. You knew that there was a physical copy up somewhere. And I remember that was such a good idea. And now it would seem mad to me that that wouldn't occur to you. But it hadn't. In all those years, it hadn't occurred to us until we saw it being done somewhere else.
So what is the best for you, the best bit of educational research or reading that stands the test of time that you would say perhaps to an ECQ, read this apart from the book?
So I couldn't recommend that. I think in terms of the book that I most enjoyed reading, it probably Hirsch, Cultural Literacy.
Okay.
Because it's so well written and it's not written by a teacher, which is, I'm not saying that that's a benefit, but I think it's about more than just teaching methods. It made me think about just living in general. I think it's a really profound book about the nature of knowledge and the nature of class and society and lots of different things. So I think in terms of reading experience, I still very distinctly remember reading that when I was first training to be a teacher, and that sense of scales falling from your eyes being really there. I think the most is Why Don't Students Like School, Willingham's book, Daniel Willingham. And I think to any new teacher, that would be very high on the list. In fact,
it's quite easy to read, isn't it? And it's quite relatable to what's going on in front of them as well.
Yeah, and I think it's really good if you're ever in a school where you're being asked to do things that you know aren't working and you just want to find a way of that book often is a real help. But then I think in terms of when I'm back in my my lesson period one, Sean Allison and Andy Farby's book, Making Every Lesson Count.
Yep, I haven't read it, but I've definitely heard it. Yeah,
I really like that. It synthesizes a lot of the things, more Hirsch or whoever it may be, and gives them. It's written by two teachers. It's written by a science teacher and an English teacher, so it gives really good classroom illustrations of those ideas.
Brilliant. Sounds good. And that's why I like doing these podcasts, is because you get different answers from lots of different people. And it's really interesting to get into your brain and to find out, you know, which one worked for you, because there's so much out there. So what we're going to do now is we're going to do a little quiz, if you don't mind, just so that we can get to know you. And then I'm going to ask you the last question was going to build up to an answer as well. So you're only allowed to pick one, and you're not allowed to think about it for too long, okay? So it's just really silly things like dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Chinese food or Indian food?
Indian food.
Staff room or your own office?
Oh, that's unfair now. I'm
You're allowed to say your own office.
We have a coffee machine in our staff room and I still use it because the coffee is excellent. And I find I have lots of the most important conversations of the day waiting in the coffee queue. So for that reason, I'm going to say the staff room.
Your staff will be very proud. An Android phone or an iPhone?
iPhone.
Hiking or jogging?
Ooh, jogging, I think.
Okay. Primary or secondary?
Secondary.
Obviously. Beer or wine?
Beer.
Swimming or sunbathing?
Sunbathing, definitely.
I'm trying to figure out what kind of man you are when it comes to your family. There you go. And marking or no marking?
Ooh, marking.
Okay, talk to me about that, because marking is everywhere at the moment.
Yeah, and we've actually been rewriting our homework and feedback policy at West End Free School. The draft version started as our homework marking and feedback. And then it became our homework and feedback policy because marking is a form of feedback, but it's a subsection of feedback, we felt.
I think it's important. Yeah. I think it's important, but you have to put yourself first. So, because I think students like to know you've looked at their work.
Yeah, and I think students like to know that you've looked at their work. We've got an English teacher at our school who always says, whenever, if anyone says to her, she's one of those teachers who marks a huge amount, and pupils recognise it, and pupils will sometimes 1 year and have another teacher. The next year they'll say, oh, why isn't my work being marked like it was by such and such teacher? And she always says, even if someone would say to her, it has no impact at all, there's zero evidence of the impact that she has, it's an act of love. I love the pupils who I teach, I respect the pupils who I teach, and if they're writing for me, it's incumbent upon me to read it. And I still teach an A-level class, two double periods, so 4 hours a week. And I mark an essay a week from each of them. And I think actually what I'm doing really, and it tells me so many things, not only does it tell me how they're doing, it also tells me how I'm doing. You get a real sense of the success of your lessons by looking at the pupil outputs. And it immediately informs what I do the next lesson, reading what they've done there. And I think that's vital. I think teachers, the most important ideas they'll have for how they're going to do something different the following year should come from when they're looking at pupils' work. So really, I think what you're doing is, especially in a subject like history, and you'll be kidding yourself if you think marking is what actually takes a long time. A tick and a kind of why is that question mark, that sort of thing, that doesn't take up the time is the reading, and I think it's an important thing to do to read and review people's work, and I think the more experience you get, the quicker you get to doing it.
I know
exactly how long it takes to get a pile of that year 12 pupils work marked, and I can make it manageable, but the key is just being so strict with yourself and just not spending anywhere longer than is necessary on it.
Absolutely. And I've just started teaching geography, or a bit of geography, and obviously I've been teaching history for a long, long, long time. I have taught a little bit of geography, but not in this much detail. So I know when it comes to marking, it's going to take me a lot longer than it would usually when it comes to my history work, just because I'm not an expert in it. Although a lot more words in a lot of the history work that you would do in comparative to some of the geography work. So it's vice versa, isn't it? We're going to end it there. And I think, as I say, we could talk for hours and hours and hours. And I think you're absolutely wonderful. And I think I'm really, really inspired by what you're doing at the West London Free School as well. And I think if anybody out there wants to go and visit a school, if you're allowed to, go and visit it, because there's some fantastic things and some really great practice to take away with there too. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. That's my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.